It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 62 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Out at the airport, they are showing steady winds from the south at 20 miles per hour, gusting to 33. They have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a 50% chance of rain for the rest of the day. And mostly cloudy skies with a high near 60. We've gone right by that. South winds to 20, gusting to 40. Chance of rain tonight before 1 a.m., then a slight chance of rain after 4 a.m. Mostly cloudy overnight with a low around 52. Southwest winds to 25, gusting to 40. And for tomorrow, it will still be windy with west winds 20, gusting to 40. But mostly cloudy skies are going to gradually become mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 61. Coming up on the Midday Report, Coast Guard rescue teams from around the state have been busy. And PFAS, Governor Dane Dunleavy vetoes a bill.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. Communities across the southeast are assessing the damage inflicted by hurricane and now tropical storm Idalia, which moved off the Atlantic coast earlier today. As NPR's Bobby Allen reports, coastal communities along Florida's Big Bend region have been decimated.
Here in the small fishing town of Horseshoe Beach, signs of devastation are everywhere. Homes torn off their foundations, trucks floating in a canal, fishing docks flipped upside down. Driving along the muddy roads on his ATV, longtime resident Dennis Miller looked at a home the storm ripped to shreds.
This is a lot worse than Irene was. It's going to take us a while to recover. We'll come back. It'll be slow, but we'll make it back in.
Miller says he's going to pitch in and help state and federal aid workers rebuild the community. He's happy no lives were lost here, but he says fully springing back will be a years-long process. Bobby Allen, NPR News, Horseshoe Beach, Florida.
A reporter for the Marion County Record, the Kansas newsroom raided by police on August 11th, is suing the city's police chief. NPR's Danielle Kay reports it's the first federal lawsuit filed in connection with the raid.
The police department in Marion, Kansas, seized computers, phones, and reporting materials from the Marion County Record newsroom and its publisher's home. They cited suspected identity theft as the reason for the raid. The incident sparked widespread condemnation as an illegal press freedom violation. Reporter Deb Groover has filed suit alleging emotional distress and physical injury due to the raid and violations of her constitutional rights. Marion Police Chief Gideon Cody allegedly snatched Groover's personal cell phone despite, quote, no factual basis to do so. Authorities have since returned the equipment seized by police. Bernie Rhodes, the Record's attorney, says the newspaper itself will also file a lawsuit over damages from the raid. Danielle Kay, NPR News.
The U.S., the U.K., South Korea, and Japan are urging North Korea to call off weapons talks with Russia. The White House says it has intelligence that Russia's Vladimir Putin and North Korea's Kim Jong-un have had a correspondence as Russia seeks weapons from its allies to fight Ukraine. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby tells NPR the U.S. is not without leverage.
Of course, we'll continue to work with our U.N. allies and partners in terms of additional sanctions should they be necessary. There is leverage, economic leverage, that can be applied to North Korea. But ultimately, North Korea's got to make the right decision here, which is not to make it easier for Putin to kill innocent Ukrainian people.
The U.S. and its allies say any Russian-Northern Korean arms deals would violate U.N. Security Council resolutions prohibiting all countries from buying or obtaining any arms from Pyongyang. Wall Street at the close, the Dow down 169 points, the Nasdaq up 15. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Coast Guard rescue teams from across the state responded to 5 calls for help over the weekend. Teams operated rescues for fishing vessels, a cruise ship, and a stranding. As KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, it made for a busy end to the summer.
The factory trawling vessel Northern Eagle was the first boat to require assistance on Friday morning. A press release from the U.S. Coast Guard says a 26-year-old crew member was experiencing abdominal pain and a medevac request was made a bit after 6 a.m. A Coast Guard helicopter arrived 2 hours later. The crew member was brought to St. Paul Island and then to Anchorage that evening for further care. Later that afternoon, another request for help. The Asian Majesty was nearly 500 miles southwest of Dutch Harbor, and a 41-year-old man was experiencing chest pain. The fishing vessel's crew agreed to meet a Coast Guard helicopter closer to the island community. The patient was brought to Cold Bay and then transferred to Anchorage that evening as well. Saturday also had rescue crews busy. Calls included an 83-year-old passenger aboard the cruise ship Nordam in Prince William Sound who was showing symptoms of a stroke. A Coast Guard team took him to awaiting emergency medical services at the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. Also, there was a 73-year-old woman near Funter Bay who was experiencing seizures. A Coast Guard rescue boat from the station in Juneau brought paramedics to the woman and then brought her to a local hospital for further treatment. Meanwhile, in Cordova, police called for Coast Guard assistance to help 5 people stranded near Port Gravina due to poor weather. The Coast Guard sent a helicopter from Kodiak that arrived that morning. 2 people were experiencing symptoms of hypothermia and were brought to awaiting emergency medical services in Cordova. A rescue swimmer helped bring the other 3 crew members back to their vessel. In the press release Monday, Coast Guard leaders commended the rescue teams, saying many of the weekend responses happened in adverse conditions, including rough seas and high winds. They say at least 2 of the 9 people served would have died without Coast Guard intervention. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
The National Transportation Safety Board released its findings on Wednesday for a Kodiak fishing boat that capsized northeast of the village of Karlik around this time last year. The Challenger was a total loss, and damages were more than $500,000, although no injuries or pollution were reported from the incident. According to the report, the boat's captain told NTSB investigators he knew there was a submerged rock in the area, but did not mark where in his charts. The report said he wanted to be closer to the shore for better fishing and to avoid harsh weather. In their report, the NTSB staff cited the sinking could have been prevented with multiple watertight compartments to help keep water from filling the hull. Marine hazards like uncharted and submerged rocks can be reported to the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration's online charts. Governor Mike Dunleavy has vetoed a bill that would ban firefighting foam containing PFAS. The harmful compounds, also known as forever chemicals, have polluted drinking water across Alaska. The bill passed the state House and Senate almost unanimously. The bill's co-sponsor, Democratic Senator Jesse Keel of Juneau, said the veto came as a shock.
I'm not sure which stage of grief I'm in exactly, but I'm not past anger.
In his veto letter, Dunleavy cited concerns about a lack of alternatives for the foams, which are often used to fight fires at airports. In Alaska, firefighting foams are believed to be the single biggest source of PFAS contamination, which has been linked to a higher risk of some cancers. Earlier this year, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency proposed new standards to limit PFAS in drinking water. Alaska doesn't regulate PFAS, but if the new federal standards take effect, then the state will be responsible for cleaning up contaminated water. Keel said his bill was designed to prevent further contamination.
Without state legislative action, the message from the Dunleavy administration is only the federal government can be counted on to get poison out of Alaska's water. I don't believe that's right.
Governor Dunleavy's office did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Lobbyists like Adam Ortega with the nonprofit Alaska Community Action on Toxics have been calling for regulation on PFAS for more than a decade. He said the veto is extremely disappointing, especially because the bill earned bipartisan support.
It's super counterintuitive, and yet again, Dunleavy does not care about his constituents.
According to Ortega, the bill's specific focus on firefighting foam still falls short of the regulations needed to curb widespread PFAS pollution in the environment.
it's the bottom of the barrel, but we're still fighting to get it passed. And as you can tell, not going very well.
In the past, Kiel has proposed more comprehensive PFAS bills, which ultimately failed. Now, the only chance for his latest bill to pass is if lawmakers vote to override the veto. Vetoes are rarely overridden, but Kiel says he hopes to try during next year's legislative session. A Washington state man was sentenced to 2 years in federal prison this week for passing off art produced in the Philippines as authentic Alaskan Native art to tourists in Ketchikan. It's the longest sentence anyone has ever received for violating the Federal Indian Arts and Craft Act. Court records say 59-year-old Cristobal Magno Rodrigo must donate $60,000 to Thlinkit and Haida Central Council's vocational program and write a letter of apology to the Ketchikan Daily News. The president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, Rosita Worrell, says fake art is a growing problem because those who produce it don't consider it a crime.
I hope that this sends a very strong and clear message that selling fake art and portraying that it's native-made is illegal.
The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute sells native art from all over Alaska at its store in Juneau.
A lot of our artists live in rural communities where there is no real cash economy. And today, we need cash in order to survive.
And fake art, Worrell says, steals income that might have gone to Alaska Natives to help them remain in their communities and maintain their ties to the land and culture. In the case of the Rodrigo family, their scheme netted $1 million in sales during 2019 and part of 2021. Perry Eaton, a Supiak Alutiiq mask carver, says he doesn't think Rodrigo's sentence is harsh enough.
The fraud is two-faced. It's an absolute slap in the face to the artists, but it's also a fraud to the buyer.
The Alaska U.S. Attorney's Office says Rodrigo's wife and son have been named as co-conspirators. Their case is still ongoing. Investigators say the family sold carvings and totem poles that were made in the Philippines, then shipped to two stores in Ketchikan, where Alaskan Native workers were hired to sell the art and present it to customers as their own work, or art by Alaskan Natives made from local materials. A number of federal agencies were involved in building the case against Rodrigo, including special agents from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Customs and Border Protections, and the Department of Agriculture, with assistance from the Indian Arts and Crafts Board and the U.S. Attorney's Office. Thousands of Alaskans are at risk of losing their Medicaid benefits this year, many because of paperwork issues. Medicaid is health insurance for low-income Americans and serves about a third of the people of the state. 260,000 Alaskans must re-enroll in the program this year or risk losing their benefits. This is after a freeze in enrollment because of COVID. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
The three-year re-enrollment pause meant recipients didn't lose Medicaid coverage even if their income went above the cutoff for the program. But this year, starting in May, Alaska, along with the rest of the country, started requiring yearly renewals again. Deb Etheridge is the director with the Division of Public Assistance.
And now, as the federal government is having the states unwind from that public health emergency, we're having to do renewals on just around 264,000 enrollees in the Medicaid program.
CMS, which oversees the program, flagged Alaska, along with 15 other states, for its long wait times and frequent hang-ups on phone helplines. The agency fears those problems will interfere with equitable access to the program, and CMS says that could put the state out of compliance with federal requirements. Etheridge says the biggest issue they're running into is people with old addresses on file. She says some people may not be up for renewal yet, so they may not have gotten renewal paperwork in the mail. But everyone enrolled in Medicaid should have received a postcard. Those were sent out in April.
We did send a postcard out to every Medicaid household. And so a person who never saw a postcard come from the Division of Public Assistance, that might be a good hint that perhaps we don't have your correct address.
Because the renewals have been paused for so long, more people have experienced life changes that may affect coverage, and more people have moved to new addresses than usual. So the Department of Public Assistance is processing extra paperwork. Anyone whose address isn't updated in the system may lose coverage even if they are still eligible. In July, the percentage of people who lost enrollment for procedural reasons in Alaska jumped by a third compared to May and June. So Etheridge says her department is doing a deep dive to try to figure out what's going wrong.
Anecdotally with my staff, I've heard that people didn't realize they were still on Medicaid, and so that may be why they're not returning the information.
Etheridge says the department is hiring more people to help with re-enrollment. About a third of people up for renewal over the past 3 months have been automatically renewed, but about another third were procedurally disenrolled. Those people may still be eligible for coverage, but Medicaid couldn't automatically enroll them. This means about 10,000 Alaskans who may still be eligible for the program have lost coverage since June. Lisa Aquino is the CEO of Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center. She says about half the center's patients are on Medicaid. She has seen the confusion of the renewal process play out at her clinic.
There are people that are finding out at really terrible times that they no longer have Medicaid, and it's a surprise to them. And everyone's trying their best to make sure that doesn't happen, but the reality is that for some people, it is happening.
Aquino says they're helping walk patients through this renewal process. She says she wants people to know that there are options for healthcare, no matter their situation or income. But she's concerned about the people who will fall through the cracks in this process.
The people who I'm maybe most worried about are the people that are not connected with a regular healthcare provider, people that are experiencing homelessness or houselessness, people that don't have an address. I'm worried about them.
So far, the state has processed about 12% of renewals. About 225,000 more people will need to renew through the spring of next year. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
LGBTQ plus youth face high rates of suicide, self-harm, and housing instability. But an organization in Alaska called Choosing Our Roots is helping them find safe homes. One of their directors, Taylor Feitner, has found the work allows them to heal some of their own wounds from growing up in a family that didn't accept them. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has this profile.
Taylor Feitner grew up in Oklahoma in a fundamentalist Christian church. Neither their family or community accepted queer or gender nonconforming people. They were outed by a childhood friend as a teen, and their parents sent them to conversion therapy with their preacher.
It was hard because it's someone who is a position of authority, who your whole family respects, who you have respected your whole life, saying really dark, frightening, upsetting things about you, and then telling you things like, you know better than this, you're better than this, you've been taught to be right, and now you are wrong.
For years after conversion therapy, Feitner again hid who they were from their family. But at 17, their parents found out and kicked them out of the house. They found a home with the family of a close friend, but they say their behavior was spiraling because they were struggling so deeply with self-acceptance and self-love.
Lots of self-harm, suicidal ideation, drug use, addiction problems, like just desperately clinging, like anything that could hurt me.
Feitner says their grandmother is strictly religious, but eventually she looked past those beliefs and gave Feitner a place to stay.
She said, it's not right how all of these adults have been treating you. And there were no expectations. There were no questions. She said, I love you and I want to take care of you. I probably wouldn't be here if that had not been the safe place for me to return to you.
That safe place helped Feitner survive and heal. In 2021, they moved to Alaska. And a year and a half ago, they started working at Choosing Our Roots. It's an organization that helps young LGBTQ plus people with housing and resources in Anchorage, Bethel, on the Kenai Peninsula, and in the Matsu Borough. Feitner says sometimes that means placing them with families who have a spare room or helping them find housing grants. That can keep kids out of foster care and closer to home. Feitner, who prefers the term queer, says they've found deep meaning as a queer person working with young queer people.
I all the time think, what would my life have been like if I had someone like me in it? And it feels like such an enormous blessing and privilege to be able to show up in that way for young people, because there's so many times, there's so many reasons that I shouldn't be here, that my decisions, my situation were so dangerous.
Feitner didn't get unconditional love and acceptance from their parents growing up, but they say their struggles help them understand the people they work with now. Feitner says the work they do is a way to rewrite their own story. It's what life could have been like if they'd had support. Feitner helps youth stay out of the dangerous situations they faced as a teen, and they help with things a parent or caretaker might. On a recent Wednesday, they took a few teens grocery shopping in Bethel.
Can I have the deli in a different bag?
Boxes would be awesome if you don't mind.
They also work with youth one-on-one, helping them create budgets or apply for jobs.
Is your phone bill due, or do you just need more data?
Okay. Amelia Hanrahan is a therapist who works with trans, gender diverse, and queer people in Juneau. She says these supportive relationships are deeply healing in both directions. It's just as important for young people to see queer adults in their community.
And if they never see somebody in their life who's like them, like, that absence is deafening. But if they do have somebody and they're like, oh, there's a path forward for me, I do exist in this world, in my community, I don't think it's exaggerating to say it can save lives.
And she says it's common for queer people to have to find ways to reparent themselves. She says doing identity-affirming work with young people can be one way to heal. Hanrahan says she came out as transgender partly because of her work with young queer people.
Seeing kids who can be authentically themselves can sometimes help us unlearn the messages that there was something wrong with us, or that we were unlovable or abnormal.
That's a lesson Feitner is helping others unlearn through their work. Recently, a young person opened up to them. She also grew up in a strictly religious family that didn't accept her. And like Feitner, she struggled with substance use. Feitner laughed when they call themselves a queer elder at age 30, but they know it shows in their work.
There's so much tragedy and there's so much death and violence within the queer community. Having someone older with a story that is similar say that it gets better, like, it sounds so cheesy, but it does generate hope. It generates peace and belonging that most people I work with have never had before.
In a few years, the young people Feitner works with will be adults. Feitner hopes they'll have practical skills and the confidence that comes from being loved for who you really are. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra with help from Sunny Bean in Bethel.
Prices are moving in opposite directions. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The Federal Reserve's favorite measure of inflation, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, rose 3.3% year-on-year in July. Prices for goods actually declined 0.5%, but rose more than 5% for services. That's similar to last month. The labor market continues to show signs of strength. Initial claims for unemployment benefits were essentially flat last week, coming in at just under 230,000. Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic says it's time to stop raising interest rates. In a speech earlier today, Bostic said declining rents have yet to show up in inflation measurements, and so price increases may have moderated more than they appear. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 31st and last day of August, the year 2023. Sun rose today at 7:08. It will set again at 9:10. That will give us 14 hours and 2 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this day was 75 degrees, set in 1930, and a record low is 36, set in 1955, and then again in 1973. Currently 62 degrees in Kodiak under mostly cloudy skies. Out at the airport, they are showing gusty southerly winds, 20 miles per hour steady, gusting to 33. They have 70% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. A 50% chance of rain this afternoon, according to the Weather Service. Mostly cloudy skies continuing. South winds to 20, gusting to 40. For tonight, a chance of rain before 2 a.m., then a slight chance of rain after 5 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low around 52, southwest winds to 25, gusting to 40. And for Friday, a slight chance of rain in the morning, then mostly cloudy skies will gradually become sunny, high near 61 tomorrow, west winds 20, gusting to 40. And mostly clear overnight on Friday night. We can see maybe the back half of that big full moon. Low around 49 overnight for Friday. West winds continuing to 20, gusting to 35. Well, let's hear what the brand new announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has to tell us.
Well, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 40, date issued 10 a.m. on August 31st. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Friday, September 1st, until 6 p.m. Sunday, September 3rd, in the following areas. In the Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Northwest Afognak and Raspberry Strait sections of the Afognak District, the Mainland District, and the Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. Cost recovery fisheries are scheduled to begin in Katoi Bay Special Harvest Area on September 2nd. All cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Closed waters will be reduced until 6 p.m. Sunday, September 3rd at Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline, stream number 255-101. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Outer Iakulik, Outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the East End Kodiak District, the Humpy Deadman section of the Alatak District, and the Duck Bay, Izuit Bay, Outer Katoi Bay, Southwest Afognak, and Northeast Afognak sections of the Afognak District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the stream terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 252-105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 3:16 this afternoon and be 8.8 feet, followed by a low tide at 9 o'clock of 2/10. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 3:44 this afternoon and be 15.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 9:46 p.m. of minus 2/10. And tide poolers, the big minus tides continue in the morning. For the east side, that will happen at 9:33 tomorrow morning. Your low tide will be minus 1.5 feet. And over on the west side, that will happen at 10:10 tomorrow morning with a minus 2.7-foot tide in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marvin Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Gale warning through tonight. South winds to 30 knots today, becoming southwest 40 this afternoon, with 10-foot seas building to 15 feet this afternoon and to 16 feet tonight. For tomorrow, southwest 30 and seas to 12 feet on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning through tonight there as well, with northeast winds to 20, increasing to south 35 and 6-foot seas building to 13 feet this afternoon. For tonight, southwest 40 and seas to 17 feet in the Shelikof, and for tomorrow, southwest 30 with 11-foot seas. Well, the Ibishan Road asphalt milling and paving continues. There will be a road closure and pilot car operation beginning Friday, September 1st, due to weather delays, so tomorrow. The project will be extended through the week of September 4th with no work on Monday in observance of the holiday. So look for a pilot car and avoid Mission Road altogether if you can.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.